You're watching Network Radio. Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
You ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen to it.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center. Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal. Unsurprisingly, on the third observance of the Sandy Hook event, the elaborate hoax, which culminated on the 14th of December 2012 after a rehearsal on the 13th, which has been demonstrated conclusively in the book Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, published on 22 October, suppressed on 19 November, after having sold nearly 500 copies, after having nearly 80 reviews on Amazon.com because the Obama administration was panic-stricken, acting hysterically, having it banned, which led to my releasing it as a PDF, so that now it's going to have millions of readers who are going to see that the Obama administration has been reduced to lying and cheating the American people with elaborated, fabricated terror stories of a child massacre at Sandy Hook intended to instill fear into the parents of America in a despicable attempt to advance its gun control agenda in violation of the Second Amendment, which the president took an oath to preserve, protect, and defend, which he is violating repeatedly. I'm delighted to have as my special guest today Alan William Powell from Australia, who's made so many invaluable contributions to our study and understanding of Sandy Hook, including Chapter 7 and 8 of the book, where Chapter 7 includes 50 photographs of the furnishing of the Lanza home to serve as a prop, and Chapter 8, 50 more of the refurbishing of the school to serve as a stage. Alan, it's a pleasure to welcome you back to The Real Deal today.
Nice to be on, always, is Jim. Nice to be on.
Just take it away, my friend. Go where you want to go. I know you've got things set up.
Oh, okay. First, I suppose, I didn't get that much kickback that I thought I would have got from exposing Rebecca. I had one lady write and say that, what am I trying to attack, natural medicine or Rebecca? And I said, well, both if they're hokey. So that probably was the only kickback I had so far. But let's
Alan, after all, her miracle oil claims to cure everything from autism to spinal injuries. I mean, that's a bit of a stretch, I dare say.
Yeah, I got a gut wound this morning and I applied some Immortel and it's gone now. So it's really... No, don't laugh, Jim. It really works. It's really good stuff. No, it's true. My cutthroat razor. Look, I slipped my throat yesterday with it from ear to ear, and it's worked. It's okay today. What we're going to look at first off is this character who is really involved in Sandy Hook, and we haven't played him much attention before, this Governor Daniel Malloy. So we're going to play a little video of him first to start with. This is Connecticut school shooting at Sandy Hook. Governor Daniel Malloy, for you, Charles.
Earlier today, a tragedy of unspeakable terms played itself out in this community. Lieutenant Governor and I have been spoken to in an attempt that we might be prepared for something like this playing itself out in our state. You can never be prepared for this kind of incident. what has happened, what has transpired at that school building. We'll leave a mark on this community and every family impacted. I only ask that all of our fellow citizens here in the United States and around the world who have already offered their assistance remember all of the victims in their prayers. To all of you on the media, we will do our best to keep you as informed as we can. After I'm done speaking, a representative of the state police will speak to you and give you some additional information. Earlier today, a number of our citizens, beautiful children, had their life taken away from them, as well as adults whose responsibility it was to educate and supervise those children. The perpetrator of the crime is dead, as is an individual who the perpetrator lived with. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Paul Vance, who will answer or will give you some additional information. And then later in the day, perhaps we'll speak again. Again, I think on behalf of the people of the state of Connecticut, we extend our condolences, as I have at the firehouse, to the parents of these children, as well as the adults that are there. I want to thank the president, who has been on the phone with us today, for his statement released to you a little while ago, as well as the statements he made to me much earlier today, as the hours raced by. And with that, I should also say that there are a number of public officials, including the first select woman, who has been on site throughout the day. We have state representatives, state senator, other select people who are here. We have the superintendent of schools who has done wonderful work in helping us get the information necessary to begin the processes that will be ongoing for a number of hours in advance. I want to thank Senator Blumenthal and Senator-elect Murphy for also joining us.
Well, Jim, this is quite clever. This is a man who knows he's conducting a fake, dragging everybody who's important in so that if they get fingered, everyone gets fingered. He mentions everybody that's important there. We haven't really noticed this guy much before because he doesn't have a lot of output. The reason he doesn't have a lot of output is he can't read or write. Now, on the 27th of November, Eric Holder, the then Attorney General, Federal Attorney General, went down to speak to Daniel Molloy about a project called Longevity. Now, I presume it was something to do with Sandy Hook, because then, lo and behold...
Well, Project Longevity, Alan, is a long-term gun control agenda that's supposed to extend the lives of Americans by controlling guns, not specific to Sandy Hook.
But no, wow, you surprised me.
But undoubtedly, that's the occasion on which he spoke to the governor about Sandy Hook, that the attorney general was the person by whom he and the lieutenant governor were spoken to.
Yes, yeah, of course. But that doesn't come to me as any surprise to me that longevity's gun control, because that's what Sandy Hook was intended to be about. But the problem is it didn't work.
Yeah.
And what happened is that Americans raced out and bought guns in record numbers. And they did that because what Sandy Hook did prove, if it was real, was that the police can't get there in time. You have schools with no armed personnel in them, like Sandy Hook, and some nutter comes in with a gun. There's nobody there to take the weight.
Alan, that's an impeccable point. The average police response time to an emergency is 20 minutes. The mayhem takes place typically in the first five. So if you want to cope with a real serious problem where someone might be killed, you're going to have to fend for yourself or suffer the consequences.
indeed, and a lot of sheriffs are now telling people in America that what they really ought to do is get tooled up themselves, get a gun yourself, because we can't get there in time. Now, there's another interesting thing to notice with that little bunch of journalists that supposedly around Daniel at the time that he's giving this spiel about this thing being played out, and that is that most of them are not real journalists. In fact, probably all of them aren't. There's one lady there that's using a pencil just to intermittently scratch a pad and not actually write anything. I thought initially she might have been doing shorthand, but she's not. She seems to be scratching in the same place with the pencil. All of the other people that are there are in front of the real media, who are, you know, several paces back, basically fenced off so that they can't get too close. Now, another thing about this this speech that he gives is that it doesn't actually say we've had a mass murder here today. It doesn't say anything like that. It calls it an incident and says it's twice he says it's played out.
Something like this might happen, yes.
Yeah, but look, we really have to focus on what he says. We've been spoken to about this. We've been warned, basically, that something like this might happen. What's he talking about? Does he mean an actual murder or does he mean a drill? If he's talking about a murder, then surely the state of Connecticut is liable in negligence for having been warned about a series of mass murders and doing nothing about it, allowing it to happen, in fact. If he's talking about a drill, then the thing's obviously fake. Anyway, let's now go on to the next one. And this has got our old friend Wolfbig in it. And this is Governor Malloy lies Sandy Hook hoax to Wolfgang Halbig. Let's watch that one now.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Governor Wolfgang Halbig.
Hey, how are you?
I'm just asking one question. Who shared with you on the national news and the lieutenant governor that somebody told you something like this at Sandy Hook would happen to you here in the state?
Lieutenant governor and I have been spoken to in an attempt that we might be prepared for something like this playing itself out in our state.
No, I didn't. Nope. I'm me. Mother
Dan Malloy. Oh, you look good on television.
Right. Well, thank you very much.
No, somebody, you said.
I didn't. I never said that.
Someone told me and Lieutenant Governor that something like this might happen. Nobody? If I can get it recording, send it here, would you look at it?
I'll look at it.
Thank you, sir. Okay?
Well, there we have it. Not once did he say that he didn't say it, but three times. Count them. One, two, three. He denied being Daniel Malloy, practically. It must have been some other Daniel Malloy. Now, this is serious stuff. We've got documentary evidence here of a man saying something, the governor of the state saying something and then denying that he says it. How is he compromised? Why is he doing what he's doing? Well, there are two basic reasons that someone has drawn to my attention. The first one, obviously, Jim, is that the man's illiterate. And
I was just dumbfounded to learn that he's illiterate. I mean, you know, that a man could rise to the position of governor. He won't even know what documents he's signing, Alan. I mean, how absurd is that?
Well, there's something a little bit special about the relationship between him and Eric Holder, and we'll have to leave that all to another day. But what we've got here is someone who's just really a glove puppet. He's a stooge. Someone is using this character who cannot read nor write, and he's tried to put out a sort of a shiny face on it by a couple of internet sites that say, oh, he's dyslexic, and the guy cannot actually put a pen to paper. This is terrible. How does he know what he's signing? How does he sign acts of the Connecticut legislature? Does somebody read out these things to him? Do they read them out accurately? I mean, as far as we know about this guy, he doesn't know the difference between the Constitution and the morning paper.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's not being cruel to say that this guy's totally inappropriate to be a governor. But he obviously didn't get there through talent. He's got there through some other way. And I wonder if all of those people who voted for him actually knew the guy couldn't read or write, that he was illiterate before they voted for him. Now, that's one of the aspects of his compromise. The other aspect, I'm afraid, is that he's got a son who's a crook. Now, I've been given some information, I'm sure it's available on the net, that this son has had two very, very serious firearms offences, which probably would have ended up with, if he was anybody else, with the son being in jail. But on these occasions, this chap, the son, got, I think, a couple of fines for $2,500 and probation. Now, that's nonsense for firearms. I think one of them was a felon in possession of firearm, which, you know, if it wasn't a third strike, should be very, very close to jail time. But that didn't happen. Why didn't it happen? Well, because his father is the governor. You can get anything out of this guy, I'm sure, just by threatening him in relation to either making his illiteracy very, very well broadcast or something to do with his son through the court system. And we know ourselves, just on what we've looked at, that the state of Connecticut is extremely corrupt. So I think we just take it from there with Daniel. But anyway, as I say, At a later point, we can have a look at Daniel and the relationship with Eric, who's also very, very questionable, and luckily who's gone now. But the thought occurs to me, Jim, that these things that we're chasing with Sandy Hook and Boston, we're merely documenting them, and we may not be achieving anything in the long run, because as soon as Obama steps down as president, he's bound to give this cadre of criminals a blanket pardon. That will happen.
Alan, what's important is the truth, exposing the truth.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
So to say that we're chasing our tails is wrong.
I'm not saying that.
Our objective is not bringing a legal case against these people who are culpable.
Legal cases are useless. I'm not saying that at all, Jim. I'm saying we're documenting it.
Yes, we are.
And at some stage in the future, when people realize this kind of stuff, we are going to be the material they use to fire their anger and their retribution with. We'll be the people who are saying, look at this. This is what was happening. And then these crooks go free. Something will happen. Something will happen in the future. And we're just giving the documentation to it. Now, what should we look at now? There's so much to look at, isn't it? It's happy. Oh, I forgot to wish you a happy Sandy Hook Day, by the way, Jim. We've got a blend of old and new today. Let's look at the first picture there, Chance, shall we? Now, Jim, do you recognize this face?
Actually, Alan, I don't. You tell me.
She's supposed to be Sally Cox, the nurse that hid for 3 hours.
Oh, yes, yes, Sally Cox, yes.
The nurse that hid for 3 hours while four searches by 16 SWAT team members were done of Sandy Hook. And then the story, she also knew Nancy Lanza for 15 years, and Nancy Lanza worked at Sandy Hook at the same time as her. That was the first story she came up with. And the second story was that she just dove under a desk, and under the desk she could see through a hole in the desk the boots of Adam Lanza. Well, several problems with that one. First of all, there wasn't a desk in the place where she could have seen. And the second one was that, as we've seen before from the evidence, Adam Lanza was wearing shoes, not boots. But somebody's drawn something to my attention. The interview of this woman has disappeared. The one saying that she knew Nancy Lanza for 15 years has disappeared from the internet.
Oh, no. Disappeared.
Wow, isn't that strange? I never would have thought it. But anyway, here's a bit more of an expose on this woman. She was also at Boston. Do you see those wavy lines around her brows there, Jim?
Yes.
Yeah, that's part of a latex prosthetic.
Really? You ever,
well, yeah, ever think of anybody you've ever seen with lines like that on their forehead? Wavy lines like
those
that?
Those are a bit substantial, aren't they?
They are indeed. What else she's got as well is, in reality, she has a very large scar on her right side of her cheek. So she's got a couple of prosthetics there. And here's a picture of how she's looked before. Let's have a look at number two there, please, Chance. Now, this is how she's looked before at Boston. You're going to say, that can't be the same woman. Before you do, have a look at the mouth.
Alan, I think you're much better at this than I am. I'm fascinated. Continue.
She also turns up in that slow-mo video, but in that one, she looks more like the woman on the right. You remember the video that shows up Alicia Hannon and who else is there? Carlos Soto. It was taken by a guy who left his video cam on as he was running away. Now, you have to slow it down very, very slow and play it very, very slow to get these faces. And one of the faces that's on there is called, it's been termed the crisis actor late on the way to work. And it's actually the woman on the right there. And she turns up as the woman on the left in the actual photographs. You remember she's the woman being pushed along in the wheelchair who's got the very pale face and some blood on her face and some blood.
It's also shameless, Alan. It's just so embarrassing.
It's terrible. It's very, very poorly done. And the next photo, let's have a look at the next one. There, Chance. Now, this character I call Mighty Mouse. He's about 5 foot high, and he's at Sandy Hook, and he's wandering around with a troop of people who don't seem to know how to handle firearms behind him. Now, I think there's a bit of a twist here because if we look at the next picture, Charles, we'll see who he's actually supposed to be portraying, who is a real policeman at Sandy Hook. The guy on the right, from what I can gather, actually does work as a policeman in Sandy Hook. The guy on the left is the guy that was supposed to wander around and look like him. Could be. Next shot, please. Oh, isn't it a wonderful Christmas? Look, there's the sad lady kneeling down, crying, and there in the background we've caught yet again the sign lit up. Everyone must check in. Do you see it there, Jim?
Let's see, way over on the left, yeah.
That's the one. So we've now got five images of the everyone must check in sign. Next picture, please. Well, here's one of our old favourites. This is Bob Lucart, who now pretends that he's a journalist, who was both at Sandy and at Boston. And he's got his big lanyard and tag around his neck there.
I think he's a director, isn't he, Alan?
Yeah, he is. He's a FEMA director. And, I mean, I think, God, if ever anybody looked like what they actually are, this guy gives it away. How fucking evil does he look? Seriously.
Yeah. No, he has a sinister. It's like Michael Chertoff, who looks like an Auschwitz prison guard.
Yeah. Now, next shot. I never noticed this before, Jim. This shows you how dumb I am. Have a look at the time on this this piece here, down the bottom there.
8:32 a.m. PT, Pacific time. So that would be 11:32 a.m. Eastern.
Yeah. What time does that look like to be to you? Actually, the guy standing there. That'll look around sort of 9-ish to me.
You mean 9 a.m.?
Yeah. All the cars have just got there and blocked the road.
Oh, yeah, yeah, in terms of the evolution of events.
Yeah, so that time might just be a setup. When it says live breaking news, I don't think it is. I think it's pre-recorded, and that's just stuck over it. Next shot. Oh, this is a wonderful shot. This is the room where all those kids got shot in the head, and he shot himself. Now this is a difficult thing, Jim. It's not really transpiring whether he shot himself up through the throat, through the top of his head, or through the side of his head now. Now,
I don't see a lot of blood and bodies, Alan.
No, I don't. Well, that's because there are none there. But there's a story in one of the pieces I've read saying that the blood from his head actually splattered in a straight line onto the whiteboard. Now, the whiteboard's behind the door. I don't see any trail of blood on anything there in front of us. I don't see anything on the carpet that looks remarkably bloody. But how many are supposed to be killed in this room? 10?
Yes. 10. And look at all the junk in the room, Alan. I mean, look at all that junk.
The things on the floor that you see there, the little pieces of paper, Jim, they're actually instructions to the people who are performing the practice of the drill, what to do. And that piece of paper on the stool there is the general instructions for the room, how to set up the room, how to go about the way of making it, documenting it to look to be real. Now, here's another one, the next picture. I'm not sure I've seen this one. This is one of the cars parked in the car park there. But it would look like the way that wet tire mark is there, that the toilet was actually put in place before the car was parked there. So if all the cars were stationary at the time of the incident in the car park, then the toilet was put there before the stationary car. Because I don't think
you're talking about a porta potty.
Yeah, it's just in the background there on the left. See it?
I can't see it very well. Okay. Chances.
So there it is.
Yeah, I see it.
So I'm presuming that the tire track there was from something that put the porta potty there.
Yeah.
And it must have done it before the car was there, otherwise it would have hit the car.
Good, nice point, yes.
Right, now here is my favourite that nobody pays a lot of attention to, and I've got to bash this one, Jim, because I think this is excellent, and I'm so happy I found this one. This is the big screen in Classroom 12.
Oh, right.
That they're using. See how it's lit up?
Yes, they're showing something on the screen.
Yeah, this is the night before Christmas for them. This is the night before the drill, and they're showing us. This picture shows us that some people were in there having an audiovisual presentation on how to mock these things up. I don't think it could really be anything else. Have you any ideas what it could be, Jim?
No, Alan. They got to be doing something about what they're doing there. I mean, otherwise it would be no point to it.
And the next one is one I don't think I've hammered enough either. You remember we found at Boston, the little dummies? I think three of them we found, kiddie dummies.
Yes.
This is one too. And the guy in the purple shirt there made a big to-do about somebody wandering around taking pictures. In fact, there's a good chopper taken video of him actually trying to.
You mean he wasn't happy about people taking pictures?
No, he was threatening this guy.
What did he think would happen at an event like this? People taking pictures all over the place?
Well, no, I don't think. I think he saw someone who wasn't taking controlled pictures.
Yes, of course.
He started harassing that guy, and one of the moderators stepped in to say, no, stop it, etc. But here he is kneeling down talking to a dummy that's supposed to be a child.
Yeah, it's a very strange-looking child, I agree. And the hand looks particularly artificial. The head looks artificial.
It's not a child at all. Now, here's another one. The next one, of course, is one of my real favorites. which shuts a lot of people up. But surprisingly, it doesn't shut up our friend political hillbilly, who thinks that both of us are complete morons and that we present disinformation and bad research because we're basically either stupid or insane.
I see now your 50-degree angles, Alan, as angles of entry. I see that on the horizontal. Whereas, of course, in relation to the window, it's a 90-degree angle. Yes, I get it.
And they're exactly on the horizontal as well.
No, it's all completely contrived. It's ridiculous. And when it comes to political hillbilly, has clearly lost his way. I mean, total incompetence. We're getting so many spectacular illustrations, Alan. It's fascinating that some are as pure as political hillbilly.
Well, is he pure? I don't. I think the guy's on the other side, to tell you the truth, from the way that he engages. I think he's on the other side from the way he engages.
Yeah. Oh, you mean it's not merely incompetence. It's a deliberate attempt to subvert what we're doing. Yeah, I get it.
No one can be intentionally argumentative with somebody all of the time. And he is. Now, next picture. This is lovely, this one, Jim. We didn't push this one enough either. Look at this. Look at the angle of that entry
just
there.
Just perfect. Perfect, Alan. Fantastic, they just built those perfectly.
Fantastic.
And that's on the inside, right? You see, look how the aluminum is peeled outward into the room.
Ah, well, we've had some people who've actually taken sheets of aluminium out into their yards and shot through them with 5.56s. But the problem is they've then turned them around and said, look, see, this works. It would do that in a window frame. So
they've turned them around. You know, they faked evidence to prove the point we've made that is obvious.
Indeed, indeed. Next picture. This is a good one. We always get part of the reason that you and I are insane is that we don't show close-ups of the window, which shows obvious bullet holes all the way through.
Well, we show them all the time, Alan.
Yeah. Well, this is the best we can do at showing no bullet holes, and I think it does show no bullet holes. I think this is done before the guys drilled the holes.
Yeah, sure.
And there's not a lot more to say about it. The next picture. Oh, this is wonderful. No blood.
Amazing.
No blood whatsoever. How did they get there when there was no blood there? Because they should have been there only when there was blood. They came after the fact. So there should always be blood on that front step or stoop or whatever you call it, the front foyer area. Now, the next one is lovely. I fell over sideways when I saw this one. This wonderful person, Team Wake Up. Have you heard of them at all, Jim?
There have been so many, Alan. You know, that doesn't ring a bell. But
these guys do a good job. They find lots of good stuff. One of the things they found, and you can go and look this up yourself, and you should go and watch people's stuff on YouTube to find this out, I say to everyone. And this one is proof Adam Lanza did not commit suicide. The next one, shows us.
How does it prove it, Alan?
Oh, well, we'll see here. Male walked into an elementary school and shot kids and faculty member. Male was fatally wounded by police on scene.
I love it.
This is from the original.
I love it, Alan. I love it.
This is from the original police record. So he was fatally wounded by police on scene. There's not many ways that you can misinterpret that, is there?
No.
He was fatally wounded by police on scene. Next one.
There are so many liars telling so many different lies that they invariably contradicted themselves.
Here's a good example of that and a very bad liar too. This is from the Sedensky report. He says that he took his own life with a single shot from a Glock 20, 10mm pistol in classroom 10. And another quote down there, the evidence clearly shows that the shooter planned his actions, including the taking of his own life. 9 times, Mr. Sedensky says that Adam shot himself. Nine times. Surely in a report you only need to say it once. Well, he says it nine times. But the official record says that Adam was shot by the police. We have a slight discrepancy there, I think, in the evidence.
Yes.
Now, here's a
There's a footnote there that says, although they gathered 154 slugs from the classroom, none of them could be matched to the weapon Adam Lott alleged to have used. None of them.
Yes, I know. That's another bit of a stumbling block, isn't it? There's also another one, because somewhere else in the evidence, it says that he was actually found with 250 live rounds on him. So if he fired off 53 or whatever, and he was caught with 250-odd on him, he was packing 400 rounds.
That's quite a lot, Alan.
It's a real lot, yeah. Next picture, please.
Now, what about this thing here in the garden? I don't know this one.
This is the bush at the front, and it's obviously dropping its leaves. So when is it dropping its leaves? Late December? I doubt it. But somebody who knows something about botany can tell us when this plant actually does drop its leaves. I've not seen this picture before, and okay. I would have drawn it to our attention a lot earlier. Now, the next one is fabulous. The next picture is from Tony Hart. Now, this person doesn't like me. I don't even know them. But whenever I make comments, they don't really like. They think I'm a bit of a prat, I think. But this is wonderful. This is from the official report. It's PDF 00084963. You can see it yourself. And it's a report by two state police officers who say that they went up in the helicopter and took pictures at 1700 hours. That's when they went up, 1700 hours. Well, on December the 14th, the sunset was at 4:23. There are 71 photos, they say. They would have had 71 photos in the dark in that case, because that's when the sunset, 4:23 on that day. So that's a piece of nonsense as well. They say, photographs of Yogananda Street and the surrounding area. Well, they couldn't, because they would have taken photographs in the dark. So when were the photographs taken that we've got, that we know are taken in the light?
Yeah, this is one of the cases where the script writers didn't know enough about the time and the date and the season of the event to get it right, Alan.
Indeed. And the next one, Chance. Now, this is from Jimmy Gill, James Gill, current OCMI. And he contradicts Sadensky's report. Sadensky says December 15th, all of the victims were transported to OCMI in Farmington for autopsies. Autopsies were performed the same day. And then later in this email to Posner, Jimmy Gill says, I incorrectly used 26 autopsy reports. There were no autopsies done at all. What happened was that there were supposed internal examinations. And in this case, he's talking about the supposed autopsy that never was on the Noah, that probably never was as well. Now, somebody's brought something to my attention, Jim, and it's one of our clever people who gives us information, and she's told me that Noah Posner is supposed to have a twin. Did you hear that one?
No.
Yeah, no. Supposed to have a twin, and it's supposed
Noah
to be a
Posner girl. Noah Posner has a twin?
Supposed to, and it's supposed to be a girl.
Maybe this explains how one, he can die in Sandy Hook on 14 December 2012 and die again in Pakistan on 16 December 2014.
Well, no, that would, if it would be a twin brother, possibly, but this one's supposed to be a girly. More bullshit.
Well, Noah bullshit. Looks very girlish, you notice. In many of those photographs, he could just as well be a girl.
He could, you're bloody right there. That's just occurred to me as you were saying it. Now, next picture down, we've seen this one before, but the full impact of this one hasn't really hit home for us, Jim. That's, as I say, it's because we're insane or really, really bad researchers. Somebody has slept in that bed. Who's been sleeping in that bed? Now, I, for the life of me, can't find a reference that I once had by Sedensky saying that there was a basement bedroom, but it doesn't appear that anybody lived there on an extended basis. Now, I cannot find that quote. I put it out in one of our earlier Sandy Hook programs, but I just can't find it for the moment. Now, if nobody lived in that bedroom, we see the bottom of the vacuum cleaner there out.
Yeah.
And in the bed looks like it's probably been slept in overnight. And the next picture we see.
But then they put boxes on top of it.
Yeah, after they got up and did something. We see his shopping and his clothes here, whoever he is, and he does appear to be a man from those clothes that I would take to be a young man's clothes. And look, what does that bag say? Buy fresh, buy local. So he's gone out, he's bought some food, he's got his clothes there. Why the hell is he doing all of this photography in this area of the crime scene? Why is he setting himself up? We can see on the door there, that was the smash where they all came through the doors at the same time. Yet in some of the reportage in the paperwork, it sounds like they went in carefully because of supposed bomb threats. Now, we saw that every door in the house was broken on earlier programs that we looked at, Jim, which really doesn't fit with going in quietly and, you know, looking for booby traps. What they did was they rushed the place mob-handed because that was part of the drill. And then possibly somebody thought, oh, hang on, shit, we should have done the bit about booby traps. And so they might have then gone back to establish some kind of compliance with what they should have done. But I'm telling you something that's really odd that I'm seeing going through the documents. A lot of the reports are made nearly a year later. And some of the reports are by the same people, and there are dozens of these reports by the same person, and they're all made on the same day. They couldn't actually have made that many reports on the same day physically. So I'm looking into that at the moment. Next picture.
Sounds like they had a deadline to submit them for the final and that they delayed.
I think it might have been the case that they really didn't think anybody was going to say, hey, hang on a minute, what happened here?
Yeah, I think Sedensky put off his report long enough so he could see what reactions there were in the media, what things had been noticed, that he could cover them when he wrote it.
Yeah. Or just to try and do the snow job of, yeah, it really happened.
Now, here you have a photograph that's copywritten by FEMA. How interesting.
Yeah, let's see if they stop you from showing it. Well, they won't. Posner is the guy who pretends that he's got copyright to this. Now,
so he doesn't even have copyright on this.
I shouldn't think so. I shouldn't think so. Why would he have? It's a product of a FEMA drill.
That's right. And we pay for FEMA. It's a public document. Everyone is entitled to access to a document paid for by the taxpayers of the United States.
You'd think so, but this is his way of trying to prevent the images from being circulated on the pretense that he's a grieving parent. Now, this is a quote by Mummy Posner, Veronique, who says that he got shot 11 times. Now, it also says that his coffin was open, which doesn't happen with Jewish people. They don't have open coffins. And she said that part of his jaw was blown away. Well, he actually had something over his face or bottom half of his face while it was an open coffin. You know, I think this possibly might have been just any old dead kid corpse dragged in with a handkerchief or something over it. And she goes on about how she then went out to have a tattoo done to commemorate her dead son. Now, Jewish people don't get tattoos. They're not allowed to be buried in their sacred plots if they've got tattoos. Anybody who watches anything by...
And they don't have... and they don't have open caskets, and they don't have autopsies either, as I understand it.
Yeah. I don't know about autopsies. I think by law they have to go with that.
In the case of a murder victim.
Yeah, yeah. But in this case, too, you remember she said that they asked that there be no autopsy, and we can't really, I think, see a coroner or a chief medical examiner saying, oh, okay, I won't do an autopsy. I don't think that was.
Well, they're legal requirements, right? I mean, either they fulfill the law or they don't, in which case they're derelict in their duty.
So let's see the next slide.
This is a very familiar. Oh.
This one.
What is this one?
This one is part of a death investigation by Louis Rinaldi, who works for OCMI. Now, Louis said that there was only an injury to the lower mouth and chin in the case of the Posner infant. So we've got mum saying that there's 11 bullets in the corpse. We've got Carver saying that there's 3 bullets. And now we've got this guy here, Louis Rinaldi, saying that there's, in fact, only one. And that was to the jaw. But then even this is a bit contradictory, because elsewhere in this same report, he says that there were 2 cardiac patches, which were obviously placed on to see if the corpse was giving a heartbeat. So nobody dies from getting shot in the lip. So how do you get away with having all of these inconsistencies? The mother says 11 shots. The autopsy, which wasn't an autopsy, but just a post-mortem examination, says there are 3 bullets involved. And this guy says he got shot in the lip, nothing else. This just on the strength of it, these 3 things would warrant the Posner kid being exhumed, surely.
I agree. Completely ridiculous that you should have such inconsistent reports. And the mother is so grossly discrepant with the others. In fact, her whole persona is profoundly dubious.
Jim, she's a Swiss national. She's got diplomatic immunity. She can get away with anything. I'm beginning to think that Mr. Posner's probably got an Israeli diplomatic passport too.
I imagine he does, yes.
I should think he would have, yeah. The next picture. Now, somebody's going to say I'm evil because of this. I don't really care. But let's have a look at the next picture there, Charles. It's just occurred to me, I think this thought may have been set off somewhere else by something I read, but I think all of these kids in this line are autistic, Jim.
Really?
I think so. And I think that's why the leading thing is...
And notice there are 2 parents back there talking with someone in a... Well, it looks like a police uniform. I mean, what are they doing there anyway? They're even in this photo. What would parents be doing there, Alan?
Well, they're asking where the free pizza is, of course, Jim.
And the bottled water.
Some of these kids, I'm a parent myself, but you should, Jim, you got to be honest about this. Some of these kids do look autistic. The 2 guys at the front there do not look very well physically coordinated as they're walking along. The 3rd girl's crying.
I think that's a fascinating idea, and you think, therefore, they might have been more amenable to manipulation without their being cognitively aware that they were participating in a staged event.
Yeah. Who's going to race up to an autistic kid and say, hey, what went on at Sandy Hook? I got to say this again because I like saying this. Alicia Hannon is the woman pretending to be a police officer there. She's ex-FBI, and she's got a wig on. We've shown photographs of her both at Boston and Sandy Hook. She's one of this cadre of FEMA actors. Look, Alicia, retire. You've been rumbled. Go and do something else, and perhaps do something else with some integrity in it next time.
Alan, we only have 7 or 8 minutes before the break, so you may want to finish this slide set if you can.
Oh, I can't, but let's keep going. 27. Next slide, please. This is a good photograph which shows how mistakes get made. We got that one, Charles, the next one? Look, there's the mobile. I don't think it is even what it's said to be. I think it's just a cold storage area. I don't think it's a mobile mortuary at all. I think it's just a cold storage area for bodies.
In the left foreground.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's a mortuary.
Yeah, we still got the flag at full mast.
Yeah, that's the giveaway. The flag supposedly was at half mast at 3:30 that afternoon. So what happened here? Somebody put the flag up again. Next one, please, Charles. Sandy Hook facts. This is quite reminiscent of all of the sorts of posts that I get. Sandy Hook facts, I think, is C.W. Wade.
Yeah, I'm sure it is, yes.
And he says there, yes, you manipulated the photos and lied and put them in a book and sold it. You are a fraud. Bring your cause of action. Helbig already tried it, scumbag, and he lost and owes me $23,000 in attorney's fees. If you want to be next to get your boot up, my boot up your ass, bring it, lamer. Well, we both know that nobody manipulated everything except beyond
Yeah, someone's a fraud here, but it's not you or me or Wolfgang Helbig.
No, indeed. In fact, I think we've got to give a good word for Wolfgang here. This guy's really been on it from the word go, and he needs several pats on the back, if not a medal. And this guy, C.W. Wade, I've asked him to come on and speak with us about Sandy Hook.
Well,
no, of course not.
Well, there's an attempt to arrange a debate between me and C.W. Wade to be held today or yesterday, and he has been utterly non-responsive.
I'll debate him any day. Same with Political Hillbilly. Now, Political Hillbilly has got a good trick. What he does is he phones up or he Skypes or tries to Skype anyone who agrees with anyone else, and then what he does is he wants to tell you the personal details about the other person so that he can put you off them. He's tried that with me. I think he's tried it with you. He's asked to speak with you privately on Skype. What will happen then is that he'll say, oh, look, you want to jettison those characters. They're bad because X, Y, and Z. It's just a trick to divide
people. Most of these scumbags know better than to try to pull that with me.
Well, he doesn't, obviously. 29, Chance. Here's something somebody else has found here. This guy looks like he's, in fact, these two guys look like they're part of the show there. That was at Sandy Hook. I think they were pretending to be ATF, those guys. Now, the next image we've got is supposedly all of the contaminated stuff being removed by the special contractor. Now, the contaminated stuff would have to be from the two classrooms. We've got two skips there. I think really what's happening here is that the contaminated stuff, in inverted commas, is all really just the drill stuff with the fake blood on it.
Yes, and, yes.
I mean, there's even a need to be more secretive about that than if it were actually real and it was a real massacre.
You got so, about three minutes before the breakout.
Okie doke. Now, we can't speak to any of these people that did any of this removal because they're under confidentiality agreements. So why would you need that? What are they going to say? Yeah, we saw desks and carpet with blood on it. We moved the desks and carpet with blood on them.
Well, remember, those involved in the destruction of the school had to sign lifetime gag orders to never talk about anything they saw or did not see, such as blood on the floor and pockmarks on the walls from bullets.
Yeah. Well, that's something we didn't see much in the classrooms while you're talking about it, Jim. Now, next image, please. This is quite wonderful. We've got photographs of the supposed victims before the incident here. These photographs, supposedly of the little darlings that all got topped on the day.
Yes, on November 23rd, 2012.
Yeah. Pretty
three
obvious.
Three weeks before the event.
Yeah. Do you not feel that this evidence is starting to add up there, Jim, a bit? It's amazing, isn't it? And the next one, please. This is a letter that Wolfgang sent, I think Wolfgang sent me this. It's from FEMA saying, there's no records of a drill on the day that you requested a search for, or something along those lines. Though we've got the handbook, and we've also got the timetable that shows there were drills on that day, and it would seem that FEMA are lying to Wolfgang here. Next one, please. Now, I'm glad this one nearly comes out, but do you see the two images here are both of the same firearm? One's got a closed four and one's got an open four. This is the Glock, the suicide weapon, and the serial number.
The SMA on the left aren't very – well, I see it's a 461.
Yeah.
But well, it's all pretty obscure on the left.
Yeah, that's because on the second run of the drill, they didn't have the same Glock. So what they had to do was just to tizzy up anybody's Glock. And I think that Glock also had a different frame pin as well. One of the frame pins was bright colored and one of them was dark colored.
Alan, listen, yeah. We need to take a break. This is Jim Fetzer, okay. Your host on The Real Deal, with my very special guest, Alan William Powell from Down Under, giving us some more information about the elaborate hoax known as Sandy Hook. We'll be right back.
We can now say with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22nd, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
Less than 3% of you people read books. Because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
Broadcasting live on network radio.
So turn off your television sets. Turn them off, pal. Turn them off and leave them off.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
We're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal. Welcome back to my continuing conversation with Alan William Powell from Australia. We're going to begin with a videotape of Wayne Carver, the medical examiner for the state of Connecticut, talking about the Sandy Hook event.
They're up all on the second floor, and I didn't get there today.
Sorry.
And it's... My sensibilities may not be the average man, firearms than most pathologists, but if I say it in court, they yell at me and don't make me answer, so I'll let the police deal with that injury.
But you said it was the long rifle that was used?
Yes.
But the long rifle was discovered in the car.
Not correct, sir.
Follow up on that question.
I don't know. There were lots of them. Okay. Have if you can control the situation, depending on your photographer, and I have very good photographers, but no, I don't.
How young?
Sorry, I don't.
How young was the youngest victim?
I don't.
How young?
Sorry, I don't.
How young?
Y'all gonna have to look at the spreadsheet when we pass it out. I'm sorry.
Did the gunman kill himself with the rifle?
No. I don't know yet. I'll examine him tomorrow morning.
Precision from the shooter, or was it spread sort of randomly?
Both. It's a very difficult question to answer. Okay. You'd think after the thousands of people I've seen shot, I could answer that question, but if I attempted to answer it in court, there'd be an objection and they'd win.
They're wearing
kid stuff.
Doctor, the children that you autopsied, where on the body were they wearing?
All over.
How many boys and how many girls?
I have no idea. It's H. Wayne, W-A-Y-N-E. Carver, C-A-R-V-E-R. And it's the second. And that's why I don't use the H, because when my father asked my grandfather, he said, fine, but as long as you never call him Harold. It wasn't a tent. It was this magnificent thing. We have three vehicles and a lot of guys that drive them. Actually, one of the highlights of my administration is that we make them as nondescript and unmarked as possible. Just to foil you guys.
Self-located, that means you don't have evidence?
I just...
You don't know. You have to check it.
They're up all on the second floor, and I didn't get there today. Sorry, I don't.
How young was he?
Both. As long as you never call him Harold.
They're wearing
kid stuff. It wasn't a tent. It was this magnificent thing. Sorry, I don't.
How young was he?
Yes, sir. One question.
Does the mother of the shooter have any connection to the school?
Yes, sir. One question.
Does the mother of the shooter have any connection to the school?
Now, you have to understand that after the shooting, we did a complete and thorough search of the entire area, the neighborhood. With our local partners, everything was examined. If we found anyone that was in the woods cutting wood, they would be detained pending the investigation. So there were no other arrests that were associated with this with this investigation that occurred. Okay?
Sir, what about the mindset?
Yes, sir. One question.
Does the mother of the shooter have any connection to the school?
Well, isn't that one of the worst performances you've ever seen, Jim?
Oh, it's embarrassing. In retrospect, it comes across worse and worse and worse. And, of course, the arrogant Paul Vance, you know, who's going to threaten to prosecute anyone who suggests that the official account is wrong in any respect, is one of the great manifest absurdities of our time.
Yeah, I understand he's back on traffic duty now.
That's right. He's been demoted.
Yeah. I know where it'd be if I had my way. But I think that Carver really was, he was put in a position. I think he's quite a, not a very intelligent man. And I think he was put in the position of 5 minutes before the drill saying, look, this is going to go down this way and you're going to comply or it's curtains for you.
Well, but Alan, remember, he was there the night before when they took the devastating photograph with the windows unbroken, the crime scene tape up for a crime that is yet to be committed, and he's there waiting patiently for his mortuary tent to show up. And
this
that was the night
you.
Before. He has to have known he was the key player in the whole event. The credibility of Sandy Hook relied on the shoulders, the words, the actions of Wayne Carver more so than anyone else, period.
I think all of the time that you've spoken about and that we know he was there beforehand, I think I would put money on him thinking it was just going to be another drill. And then I think that when push came to shove, he's just told, look, this is how we're going to run this and you have to go with it. They've got something on him, Jim.
You mean feigning that it was real. He was set up thinking it was just going to be another drill.
I think that's probably the case. And
well,
I think
that's very interesting, Alan.
Well, let's put ourselves in his place. If you're in that and you know it's fake, are you going to be wandering around the scene as much as you can?
Absolutely not.
Well, that's why he's there, because he doesn't know it's going to be
put out. And since your reputation is on the line, your whole career would be placed in jeopardy by being exposed as participating in a fraud. A man with integrity and principle wouldn't do it unless, as you suggest, they had something on him and were essentially extorting him to give this miserable performance of his life.
When it's just a drill and he's told it's just a drill, they don't need anything on him. He just has to comply with the drill requirements. But when you get to the stage where they say to him, look, this is going live, at that stage, I think they've probably got something on him. Now, he's got a bit of a gambling habit, from what I understand.
Yes.
And somebody confronted him actually in a casino.
Yeah, in Las Vegas, and he admitted that it had been a hoax.
Well, what can I say? Now, let's look at this next lovely diagram.
24.
This is in the official material, this one. We've seen this one before, but we haven't seen it with the little green lines. And look, they show us the holes again in the window frame. They're not realizing that somebody might say, well, look, how do you get holes in the window frame that are 90 degrees to the frame and 50 degrees to the frame and parallel to the floor and all parallel to each other. Well, now they don't bother to think that far. They give a little narrative here of what happened. And in this narrative, I think this came from one of those sites called Sandy Hook Facts or something that tries to debunk the debunkers. And this one says that his Glock was misfunctioning, so it had to be cycled three or four times. Well, that's not shown by any of the images that I've got that show only one cartridge case and one 10mm round on the floor. But this is an imaginative sort of put up where somebody's trying to say that their version of what happened. It says that he puts the pistol to the back of his head. Do people usually do that? No, they don't. They usually put it under their throat or on the side of their head to the temple. But this says he puts pistol to the back of his head, satisfied with his mission, and fires in an upward trajectory. So he puts it to the back of his head and fires in an upward trajectory.
It's a stupid idea,
it's
Alan.
Nonsense. It's nonsense.
Yeah.
The hole in the hat was at the front, and the hole in the ceiling was pretty much vertical. So how do we get all of this nonsense in as a real story? And all the stuff here that...
all the straight lines are revealing all by themselves, Alan. Just look at those green lines and look at the pink. Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous on its face.
It is. And this little diagram was concocted no later than August the following year. This is another one of those pieces of evidence, in inverted commas, that comes up nearly a year later. And as I say again, I think this is because the people who framed this hoax didn't realize that there would be so many people saying, now look, hang on, wait a minute, this doesn't fit, that doesn't fit. So they'd have to come out with nonsense like this. Next picture, please. But for everybody that's trying to show the truth, there are people who are just like, hit you, for example, this wide awake guy here, hits you. But for Fetzer, lying is an instinct when his ego is involved and probably doesn't even think about it twice. Now, this guy's just...
This is ridiculous. We did find a new publisher and a new distributor. We have. The imprint is Moonrock Books, but we don't print our own books. We don't have our own press. I mean, this is just an ignorant remark that is intended to be belittling. It's stupid.
You have to, you know, I regularly sort of trawl the sites of the programs that I've done and correct people, but you can't do this all day. You've got stuff to do. You can't look around for each of these stupid disinformation postings and fix them up. It just can't be done. Next picture, please. Here he is, the demon. Well, just perhaps a bit of what we already know about the non-existent Adam Lanza. No internet footprint. All of the stuff that they said about him wargaming and all the rest of it. Well, I've looked through the warrants for the searches on the internet company, and they weren't issued until the following August either. So how did they know where he went? How could they put out things saying, oh, he was a war gamer and he did this and he did that on the net? They hadn't conducted a search until August the next year. The warrants are all there in the official police stuff. How can you say with any certainty what this kid did on the internet when you haven't done a search with the ISP, the internet service provider? This just keeps on giving. The more you look, the more you find. What they want is people who are just going to shut up and take the story. But once you start...
Yeah, there's a tendency. They're doing this in San Bernardino just as they did it in Boston, of laying on more and more, just a mass of details, all of which is fabricated in an effort to suppress any opposition on the ground that, my God, they couldn't possibly have faked all those details and that massive quantity of evidence when it's precisely what they're doing.
Yeah, it's what they get paid to do. There's also something I've looked at, just go off subject for 2 seconds, Jim. San Bernardino, how come the shooter's place was actually boarded up and the door had been knocked in previously?
Yeah, there's so much rubbish. And why did they let the media trash the part where they lived? I mean, destroying any forensic value it might have. It goes on and on, Alan. It's just endless.
They don't. Well, let's be real. They don't need forensic value once the two perps are killed. They don't need to prove anything in court. So they don't need forensics. They only need a PR story.
To this day, by the way, it's not clear that anyone actually died there.
Yeah.
The body on the street had the face photoshopped and appears to have been a dummy. Gore.
Do you remember we had that and I said, we had Roy on as well, and I said to him, yeah, that looks like a dummy to me. And I think Roy was sold on that as well. I think Roy thought it was a dummy too.
Yes, right, very good, yes.
But back to this character, here's what I think he is. I think he's Ryan Lanza as a young kid, and I think there's something very misty going on with the Lanzas, the father and the son, and this was part of some sort of a pressure technique on them. I don't know what it is. We'll find out, you know, in years to come, but at the moment I'm not sure what it was. Now, this one's one of my favourites too. The next one, please. Meneely's. Mr. Meneely. I had an email discourse with him, and, of course, he couldn't remember when he delivered all of the stuff he delivered, and he said that he delivered it for the sake of the community. Well, he certainly delivered it early in the morning, and I think he delivered it on the morning of the 13th, and I think he doesn't...
Is he delivering pizzas and bottled water to the firehouse?
Indeed.
And he can't remember when he delivered it?
No. Well, can you remember when you last attended your last mass murder, Jim? Seriously.
I mean, really? How
would you expect someone
this
to
remember? This is loopy. This is completely ridiculous.
Now, here's a man that never was, a character that didn't take off. This next slide here, Marvin LaFontaine. Know anything about him, Jim?
Not off the top of my head, tell me.
Oh, for a very short time, this was supposedly the love of Nancy Lanza's life. But he
the
didn't
love of take. Nancy Lanza?
Yeah, but he didn't take. I wonder if it was because of that wig that he's wearing there that it didn't take.
He looks like he's a little young for Nancy Lanza.
Oh, he just looks fake, doesn't he? And there's the two pictures, supposedly, of Marvin LaFontaine. They look like two entirely different people to me. What do you think? I wouldn't put money on them being the same person.
Those two photographs?
Yeah.
Yeah, they might not be the same person, I agree.
But he didn't take. There wasn't much press output on Marvin LaFontaine, so not many people picked up on him. Next picture, please. Now, this next picture does show that somebody in the DHS has got a sense of humor, Jim. Robbie Parker.
That doesn't even look like the Robbie who came out to give the press conference.
I don't know. I think it could be a really good double. It could pass. If you were on a galloping horse looking through a brick wall, it could pass to Robbie. But somebody there in DHS has got a sense of humor, because if you look on his arm,
yeah.
look to the elbow there.
Yeah.
Somebody stuck a big nipple on his elbow. And this is kind of saying Robbie is a big tit. It may have been an English person that did that to give us a little bit of a clue.
I would say it would need to be to make the humor work.
Yeah. Oh, it does work with me. He was a big tit. Do you remember that coming out with his heavy breathing and saying...
Of course. Hyperventilating, all that. Yeah.
But he didn't forget to say...
That story is... So familiar, Alan.
He didn't forget to say what the trust fund was all about.
No, of course not.
You could donate to that.
Right.
Next picture, please, Chance. Now, here we go. This is supposedly the father, Peter Lanza, with a plasticky kind of nose in one of those pictures.
On the right, yeah, a plastic nose.
Yeah, and someone has mentioned that the one on the left looks very, very much like a TV show host whose name I forget at the moment. But if you really did think that the guy on the left has got that kind of nose, and he supposedly is a vice president of GE and he doesn't get a nose job, it's just ridiculous stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Supposedly very important, and the only images we can get of him is him and the whiskey bottle there. Just doesn't seem right. Just doesn't seem right at all. The next picture is of one member of the Valverde family who are up in this scam business, up to their necks, heavily involved in Boston, two of the Valverde girls, involved in Boston, one of them to the extent of turning up outside the courtroom where Tsarnaev was being, or supposedly was being tried, sticking some kind of apparatus on her foot, or a leg rather, and saying that she was injured, and the apparatus that she's got on is actually for a strain injury. So anyway, here's one of them, both at Boston on the left and at Sandy Hook on the right. She's got a little bit of a falsy nose there. And the picture may even be reversed, because do you see that little baldy kind of spot that the lady on the right, left has got, sorry?
Oh, yeah, in her hairline?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And if you look at the picture on the other side, the spot is on the other side. So that may just be a mirror.
That's a common technique.
Yeah, that may just be a mirror of her face. Now, next shot, please, there, Chance. Now, this man needs no introduction. I thoroughly detest this man. This man is what's wrong with the world today. This man has no integrity. This man pretends to have talent, which he doesn't. This man fools a lot of people who allow him to do their thinking for them. He wrote this stupidly naive article in the New Yorker, Time of Reckoning or The Reckoning or something like that, supposedly telling us all what Sandy Hook was about, and basically, here it is, move on, forget it. No, it doesn't work like that. The way it works is that we listen to what you say, we appraise what you say, and if we don't believe you and we think you're a liar and a charlatan, we call you a liar and a charlatan. That's how it really works. This man doesn't understand it. This man thinks you can set yourself up to be a literary personality simply by having a lot of money and writing fake books. That he's involved with Sandy Hook is absolutely no surprise to me. Next picture, please.
His name, Alan?
Solomon. Andrew Solomon.
He's the one who claimed to do the interview with Peter Lanza.
The non-existent interview.
Right, yeah. Right. I was assuming that was who you meant, but I wanted verification. I've not seen his photo before.
That is him. Next picture is Christopher Murray, supposedly a career gay man, he calls himself, who was out there with Ben Wheeler, who got shot at Sandy Hook. And this is one of the pieces that they set up to try and make it look like there's a real history, a legend, as it's called, so that you read this and you just it just gets absorbed into your mind that this guy knew them and he saw the kid. Another charlatan. I chased this guy for about 4 months. No response whatsoever. And all I was saying is, when did you first meet the Wheelers? What was the nature of your relationship with them, you know? It wasn't anything drastic. I mean, I wasn't asking him on a date or anything, you know, but just no response whatsoever. Next picture, please, there, Chance. Now, I kind of see this as a danger sign. No media beyond this point. Once you start saying that a section of society that's supposed to inform other people in society, and they do that as their vocation, as their job, as their profession. Once you say that they can't go and look and report what they see, you know that the thing you're going to get is going to be a government version. And that's what we do obviously get from Sandy Hook, because there was no media at Sandy Hook apart from that silly lady from, what was it, the Courant, was it called, Jim?
Yeah. Oh, the Hartford Courant, the Newtown Bee and the Hartford Courant.
Yeah, she photographed the fake parade.
Shannon Hicks.
Yeah, she photographed the fake parade of the
Newtown Bee.
Newtown Bee, that's it, across the car park there, and did it twice. So she knows it's fake, but she's just not got either the courage or the integrity to say it was. She'd be dead next week if she did anyway. Now, here's someone I particularly detest, this next wicked bitch. Caitlin Roig, her name's supposed to be. I don't know who she is really. But what I do know is that anybody who's just supposedly locked themselves in a 3x4 toilet with 15 kids and heard 26 other people being shot to death, wouldn't be wandering around the crime scene with her grandmother. She would actually be taken off to a hospital, and there she would probably be given some kind of medication to calm her down.
The whole story of Caitlin Roig is so preposterous. I mean, you couldn't even physically get all those kids into that little space. It's just stupid from the beginning. Wolfgang Helbig has a particular antipathy for Caitlin Roig. He would like to see her get her just due, which would be a legal finding, a formal punishment, what have you.
Who would not? And there's another point that goes towards making this woman's story completely unbelievable, is the fact that she says that she dragged a bookcase in front of the door. The door opened inwards. You've got to have the bookcase inside for it to be of any use. How does that fit?
Now that you get all those kids in a little 3x4 space, yeah. I mean, it's just incredibly stupid beyond belief.
And for 45 minutes.
We're talking about a physical impossibility.
Yeah, and for 45 minutes.
Yeah, these kids would be all squashed together and giggling and peeing in their pants.
Of course.
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Next slide, please, dear Charles.
It's like they're trying to outdo themselves to see who can pass off the most outrageous story.
Look, Jim, they rely on us to be stupid. They rely on us to be dumb and just accept. They rely on it. Like this shot here. Now, this looks like a parent-teacher's meeting just after they've had the meeting, doesn't it?
Yes.
If you look right at the back there, you can see the wrong Mighty Mouse speaking to
him. Yeah, I see him. He is as short as you suggest.
That's not the right guy.
Well, this is a very short guy in a police uniform.
Yeah, but the uniform is slightly different.
All right.
That's not him. He also wanders around a bit.
And the bottled water, of course, ubiquitous at all of these drills. Oh, it's like everyone, every participant is there for the bottled water.
You can't go without it. And they can get them signed by their favorite crisis actors as well. So it's a double plus, isn't it? Free water. That girl in the front there, she's got her two bottles there. Look, she'll take them home.
That's ridiculous. In Oregon, college shooting, there were boxes of bottled water all over the place.
Yeah, we even pointed out the guy with the boxes on the trolley there bringing in fresh bottles.
That's right.
Next one, please, Chance. Now, what do you think of this, Jim?
Yeah, I think that this was a woman who was performing these feats, faking to be this Nancy Lanza. It's all ridiculous.
For those who've been following this sham and don't know about Annie Haddad, she apparently lived a couple of streets away and kept up the pretense of going into the Lanza house to make it look like she was Nancy Lanza. Now, I think at the time she also had an infant. And that kind of would explain those nappies that we saw in the bathroom cabinet.
I think these kinds of comparisons are difficult. And of course, she's got this weird expression on the right.
Yeah. Yeah. But look, Annie Haddad she can email me or you and say, no, that's not me. And we can then later say, no, it's not her. She told us it wasn't. Nobody's done that yet to anything that I've said. I've not had anybody turn around and say, Mr. Powell, you're wrong. I am that person and this happened. None of that's happened.
Yes, yes, yes.
Now, what that signifies to me is that those people who are involved in this are obviously under confidentiality agreements. And so they don't do what people would normally do, which is, you know, either send you a letter, an email or something saying, look, you're just bloody wrong. You're an idiot. What you're saying is completely wrong. Nobody does that. Now, that of itself is telling. Now, let's look at the next slide. Well, this is supposedly on the morning of the deal. And it's 28 degrees. And as Roy said, yeah, let's set up the triage area outside in the cold for the victims. No, they wouldn't be doing that. But where's the kids?
Yes.
Where's any triage victims?
Yes. We're 469 other children. Where are the 70 staff, the cafeteria, the janitors, the administrators, the secretaries? Where are they?
Where's everybody gone? And what usually happens, I've seen real disasters. I saw one real disaster in a town where I lived in England, where a very have you ever heard of Thermos? The Thermos flasks? They're like vacuum flasks.
Okay.
First people made vacuum flasks.
A thermos, sure, of course.
Yeah, that caught fire. And a couple of people were killed in it, but the rest of the staff stood around watching it for a couple of hours. Now, I'd suggest what happened to you here, if you've got nearly 500 or over 500 people, they are going to go off somewhere a short distance and wait and see what's happening at the scene from which they've just fled.
Yes, I agree.
We don't see 500 people here anywhere. We're lucky if we see 150 all up.
Less.
Now, next picture, 49 charts. Now, this is one of the Soto clan. Brother Carlos turned up at Boston as well, tinkering with a little kind of gadget in his hand while the bomb had gone off 8 seconds ago. She's looking there like she's crying. She's pretending to cry. And who's taking the photograph? Well, the official FEMA photograph photographer is taking it because real press are not allowed in. We know that because we've seen the sign at the front. So the FEMA guy is setting up this picture for us to show us all how sad it is. And we've got to be suckers here. We can't look at this and say, is this staged? Otherwise we're heartless. Well, let's look at another picture, the next one.
They've overplayed that card, by the way.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And here's where we're really heartless in saying that this guy's a complete fake, Robbie Parker, who took not this one photograph of him, but I think I've got 8 of him in the no media area. That speaks volumes. Somebody was there, an official photographer taking snaps of this guy. It was a setup. This guy is being staged so that we can put him forward as one of the parents who suffered so much that he can then go on a tour around America, get $10,000 per lecture with all of these other charlatans saying how we've really got to stop people having guns because this is what happens when you have guns. Now we could go on to the next set there, Charles, if you want. That's not mine.
Where did that come from?
Yes, they're fakes. I've never seen those before.
Here we go.
Now this Posner character is raising his head again. Posner is 68. He's 68 when he's born in 67. No. It's Wolfgang Halbig who's 68, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I must have misread that. I thought they were trying to say that Posner's 68.
Yeah, I think Wolfgang's 68. That's
how it reads. What does that mean? Lenny Posner said, Wolfgang Howard. The 60-year-old security de facto. Oh, yeah, that's right. It is. Wolfgang's 68. I know that. So he's supposed to have
the de facto leader of a community of conspiracy theorists known as fuckers who claim the shooting had been staged by the government.
Hmm. How do you like that damage to the English language there, calling us hoaxers?
Yeah, right. I know. It's irony, isn't it?
Turning the tables completely.
That's right. Now,
for anybody listening and who doesn't know, a hoaxer is someone who performs a hoax, someone who exposes that an incident is a hoax is called a debunker. That's the best word I can think of it. They show that there's bunk in something. Now, this character has come up again. What's he come up as? Oh, it's this terrible terribly bereaved father business again. You remember there was recently a bit about James Tracy, Jim, in the Southern Atlantic Rag, whatever it was called, that newspaper.
Yeah.
That had, had this
the
character.
Sentry, the Sun Sentinel.
Sun Sentinel, that's it. There was this character and his ex-wife saying, oh, it's terrible, you should sack this.
Jim Tracy is part of that article, from the Sun Sentinel, yes.
Yeah.
I wrote a letter to the editor about this. I do not know if they have published it. I know James Tracy submitted a very lengthy rebuttal that they ought to be legally, obviously morally obligated to publish, but we'll see.
Well, there's two sides to this one, Jim. And the first side is that they didn't put it in the newspaper, this article. They only put it on the net.
Or the internet version.
Yeah, and look who the author is. Mike Spies. Mike Spies.
Sounds like a fake name, doesn't it?
Does a bit. But Mike's got an anti-gun site, lo and behold. Did you know about that?
No.
This is where that story comes from, Mike's anti-gun site. So it may not be that the newspaper actually put it out on its own site. It may just be that it's gone out on this site. I think his site's called Tracer or something like that. But the other side is that let's just follow Jim Tracy's progress. Were he to be sacked, he then takes an action against his employer and against the Posners. The Posners, he takes an action for them interfering with his contractual relationship.
That's right, tortious interference of contract.
Indeed. And then he gets all those lovely discovery powers, and they're not discovery powers that have to be executed in the state of Connecticut, but in the state of Florida. And he can get all the information he wants about the Posners. Are they going to get him sacked? They would not just be shooting themselves in the foot.
I think Lenny actually lives in Florida.
Does he?
Yeah.
Ah. Well, somebody needs to tell Lenny that's an extremely stupid thing to try and get Jim Tracy the sack. Now, next one. This is a clincher, this one. Number two. You know about this, Jim.
Sure, of course. I cite it all the time. That was from 1995 when he was addressing a National Democratic Women's Conference in Washington, D.C.
Yep. We need to really brainwash people. What sort of person talks about brainwashing people? A totalitarian.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen this guy in front of congressional hearings? It's a good job he's gone now. But he couldn't have given two shits about the place of the government. He thought he was an emperor unto himself.
Yes.
And I fully intend to expose this guy for what he is a bit later on. But anyway, next picture. Now, this is the sort of rubbish that you have to put up with, or at least you and Jim do. They haven't got round to me yet. They're seemingly by Keith Johnson, of course, who also won't come on your show and talk to me. There's seemingly no limit to how far some will go to enforce on others their warped interpretation of what
happened. Sandy Hook parents could be in danger from two university professors. Give me a effing break. I mean, this is absurd.
This is the James gang.
This is James Tracy and James Spencer.
Isn't it? This has been floating around for at least a year, as far as I know.
I've never seen it before.
No, it's hilarious. It's hilarious, yeah. Now,
Keith Johnson is a zealot on Sandy Hook. I debated him defeated him, and he couldn't accept it. He kept wanting to do another and another and another. He's absolutely obsessive. And he's a crackpot. He's a Sandy Hook crackpot.
I think you're too generous to him there. I tend to think that these people who keep on with it are doing it because they're paid to keep on with it, Jim.
Alan, I defer to your judgment.
Now, there's a case of a person whose name I can't tell you, but we may both know them, And they've had some incredible pressure put on them recently. And that pressure is coming from the Connecticut government through a couple of ops. And we'll disclose that a lot later. Now, next slide. Now, I think we found one of the first responders here, an actor called Kevin Lowry, who got himself a nice haircut and put on a uniform and stood in front of a camera and said, yes, we were here first. That could be him.
That yeah, it looks a lot like the jawline and so forth from the side. It looks very similar to me.
Well, if you're listening, Kevin, you know, you can get in contact with me. You can put a post there.
Let us know we're wrong, Kevin.
Yeah, we'll retract.
We'll even bring you in for the right of rebuttal.
Yes, and now the next slide, I think, is the most symptomatic of all of the rubbish that you go through. When you get someone like Amazon pulling a book, it's ridiculous. It's going to make it one of the most famous books on Sandy Hook that there is.
Well, it already is. There are 20 books on Amazon.com about Sandy Hook. Only one of them drew conclusions that disagreed with the government, and that, of course, is the book they banned, which had no less than 13 contributors, including 6 current or retired professors with PhDs. I think they found it just too threatening because the evidence presented is so rock solid and mutually reinforcing and demonstrates the entire event was an elaborate hoax in a way that is irrefutable.
I think it is irrefutable. I don't think you can. What can you do to show that it did happen? It didn't. It's just not there. It's just not there. Now, the next slide shows us that somebody does have a sense of humor. It's of 3 of the young girls. It's all a load of balls. They've got the 3 young girls going up, and look how many Christmas trees they've stuck along that road there, seriously.
Well, I think they had 26, which just happened to be behind the firehouse, 26, and they put 26 stars on top of the firehouse now, believe it or not.
It's all very well orchestrated, isn't it? You got to give them that.
Yeah, it's done with a certain touch.
And
it's
what
did you say? It's got a certain literary flair that suggests this whole concocted scheme came from the mind of someone with literary talent.
Well,
and there are members of the Newtown community who qualify in that category.
Yes, so there's lots of actors and failed musicians and failed actors and all the rest of it around the area. But money talks, Jim. You get these people who've got artistic pretensions. They've achieved nothing in life. Someone like, say, Gene Rosen, who used to be an actor. What's he got going for him? Not much. What's he got if he involves himself in this bullshit? Well, he's got his 15 minutes of fame and probably a lot of money. I wonder how much it cost to set him up. Do you think he got, say, about $1 million, Jim?
It turns out he had given anti-gun lectures on behalf of FEMA before this event. And, of course, his entire story is fantastic. He claims he heard gunshots coming from the school, but he didn't call the police to report them. He claims that a bus driver dropped off 5 or 6 students at his door, and he took them in and gave them orange juice, and they played with stuffed animals until they started to tell him what had happened. But I think that was to introduce the idea of buses. If there were 469 students, that would take a lot of buses, even at 50 students per bus, Alan. But why would any bus driver be dropping off children at the home of someone who is not their custodian or parent? Gene Rosen was not the custodian or parent of any of these children. And what would a man of his age be doing with stuffed animals?
Well, look, I've told you before, it was a bad script. That's just what was called for on the script. And another instance of the bad script, I've started going through the official materials now, not as assiduously as I should have before, but what I find now is that wherever there's any form of voice recording from the school itself, saying, oh, there's a madman here, I'm sitting with Dorothy, she's been shot, anything like that. Certainly no gunshots in the background that I can hear. I've got one recording of a woman who says that she's supposed to be in one of the classrooms. She's got someone in there who's been shot with her. He's just come in. He's just shot the woman. The woman's made it into this classroom. They've closed the door. And from then on, I think it's about 14 minutes worth of recording, but I don't hear a single gunshot in that, Jim. Not
yes,
one.
Yes, yes.
Now, I've heard AR-15s, and their crack is pretty penetrating, unless I got a suppressor on. And I don't think he had a silencer or anything on.
No, I don't know.
In 14 minutes inside a school with a shooter wandering around very long corridors that echo, firing off 153 or 4 rounds, I would have expected to have heard some gunshots. And I don't. Another point is that on one of the warrants that they supposedly issued on the day, there's the date of the 13th. So somebody's cocked up there.
Yes.
These are just things.
There's a lot of confusion about that 13, 14. Many of the performers, the participants, didn't realize the difference. So that we had donation websites that went out on the 13th. We had Adam Lanza's date of death being recorded in the Social Security Death Index as occurring on the 13th. And of course, Wolfgang can't even get information about the delivery of the porta potties because it would have revealed they were delivered on the 13th. And you got the man who brought the pizza and the water bottle can't even remember the day he delivered them when the shooting was on the 14th. So if he delivered them on the 14th, there would have been no doubt about it.
Another thing is that when you start going through some of these reports, and there are hundreds of reports from people who picked up the evidence, delivered it to so-and-so, and they're all dated. Now, some of them have got dates changed, and they've got double signatures. Somebody has traced over the signature and not done it very well. So they've changed the date, and they've changed their signature as well for some reason. I don't know if that was done graphically or simply on the copy, but it certainly has been done. And they're not very, very precise in their detail. One of the warrants was issued on the 18th, according to the date of a report, and it was actually supposedly issued on the 14th. And all that nonsense about they knew that he did this, that, and the other on the internet without the warrant having been served till the following August. That just shows all of that reportage to be complete nonsense, all of it. You couldn't know what sites he'd been on. He didn't have a record of it on his computer because he was his hard drive was stuffed totally, according to the real story. But here's something else from Sudensky. Sudensky, who knows nothing about computers or telling the truth, says that what Adam Lanza used to do was to regularly reformat his hard drive to keep his internet footage off or his footprint off of the net. That's complete bullshit.
That's ridiculous.
Internet footage goes by the servers, the other computers that you visit.
Yes.
And you may not have a record of them, but your ISP, your internet service provider, has got a record of it. And that's what they were serving a warrant on, an internet service provider, so that they could see what he'd done. But they were doing that in August. They weren't doing that around the 12th month. They weren't doing that around December at all. They were doing that 9 months later. So how could they be saying what he did on the internet when they had no clue until the warrant gave them the information? They couldn't. It's all just made up.
Yes, ridiculous. Ridiculous.
We sound like madmen keep on about this, Jim. You know, do you fish at all?
Oh, I did some fly fishing when I was in college, but it was.
Well, I mean.
It's not endured. I'm not a fisherman.
No, I'm not anymore. I used to like fishing, but perhaps we should talk about some other things because we really are pretty obsessive on this stuff, aren't we? I mean, we've. We've proven this.
Well, look at how the role of the media. I ran across a very interesting video today about why they use crisis actors instead of having real events, that they learned from 9/11 that real events can have spinoffs and consequences that are undesirable, such as the four survivors of men who died on 9/11, known as the Jersey Girls, who continued to put pressure on the Bush-Cheney administration until finally, after 441 days past the event, they succumbed to the pressure to create a 9/11 commission. Now, yes, if you had actual parents of children who'd actually died, they'd be filing all kinds of lawsuits. They'd be off the reservation. They'd be issuing all kinds of complaints, all kinds of criticism. They couldn't manage them. No, so it turned out to be a stroke of genius to have the whole thing fabricated. You have actors you're paying or otherwise benefiting, as these families at Sandy Hook have derived in excess of $1 million per family by donations from the kindness of gullible Americans who have been played for saps. And then you're able to manage the message. You have the media focus on what you want to get out. You can control the whole story. You can keep it consistent. So ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, Fox, MSNBC are all telling the same story. They're all from the same songbook. They got the same lyrics, the same words, and it's totally scripted and controlled. So they found that is far more desirable. And besides, if anyone actually got killed, you might have trouble getting, you know, raising extras by use of Craigslist, which we discovered, of course, was done in San Bernardino and many of these other events. And, you know, the Screen Actors Guild would take a dim view of it if any of their members were killed.
Well, what I saw on Australian television last night was it's the third anniversary of the Sandy Hook massacre. Not a mention of the book. Nobody died at Sandy Hook. But we get the same message here. We get the, here it is. This is what came out on the wire. This is the standard story. And we sit and watch such bloody propaganda, especially stuff against Russia as well, Russia and China. We get it directly from the American feed, showing how we must dislike Russians and Chinese as well at the moment. What do you do about these journalists that just fall into line, Jim? What can you do?
Oh, it's a disgrace. It's a national disgrace, Alan, because the founding fathers, you know, never contemplated that the so-called fourth estate, meaning the press, would be so derelict in their duty, so corrupt and completely dominated by the government as to become an organ of disinformation and propaganda. Thomas Jefferson was once asked whether he would prefer a government without newspapers or newspapers without a government, and he said he'd prefer the latter to the former, but he had no idea that the Fourth Estate could become so totally subservient and corrupt. No idea whatsoever.
They're just like public relations offices now.
Yes.
There's no sense
They're marketeers. They're information marketeers. Yep. They're promoting the government's version as though it were a product.
Well, do you know who's taken their place?
Well, the alternative media, like us, Alan, are doing investigative journalism in the world.
We have.
I know. It's disgusting. It's disgraceful that we ordinary citizens have to step up and pick up the responsibility that has been so woefully abdicated by the media in the United States. It's a disgrace, Alan.
I tell you what, though, Jim, it does give you a great sense of moral ascendancy to be doing it. It does me anyway. I feel so much holier than thou with everybody that I fight with about these things to show them the truth. And I can't really see myself doing anything else.
Well, Alan, I dedicated myself since I retired in 2006 to doing the study of these complex and controversial issues by applying my background and ability, which is very distinctive among the so-called conspiracy community, to expose what actually has been going on. And you know, with a collaboration of wonderful people like you and a host of others in relation to JFK, 9/11, Wellstone, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, and more, we have been able to unearth a very high degree of accuracy what actually has been taking place in these events and exposing it to the American people. And Alan, I think one of the colossal blunders, I think this will go down in recent political history, ever made was to ban the book on Amazon, because by having released it as a PDF, everyone wants to see what book was banned. I have a friend who's monitoring this and has seen searches for the book on Google in excess of 2 million at a time, but that they're constantly revising the number, Alan, to depress it so people won't know how many millions have actually downloaded the book. But as you remarked in passing, this is going to be an object of study in classes in journalism in the future of American universities.
And the nonsense is that we find all of this stuff on the internet, Jim.
I know. They're going out of their way to try to demonize the internet now in relation to other frauds like ISIS and San Bernardino. They're trying to spin it. If they only didn't have access to the internet, this would never have happened. But it would never have happened if the government hadn't faked it in the first place.
Well, they can't control it. It used to be controllable. The media used to be radio, television, newspapers, some kinds of advertising. But now we have the power. We are the media. People may not watch us in millions, but look how many people watch Alex Jones as compared to any of the free-to-airs. He's, in some cases, he's got double the number of people watching him.
That's right.
And soon he's going to overtake Fox. And well, he will do.
They're trying to control Alex. I mean, such as having the article up on InfoWars that included that classic photograph of the SWAT team there with the unbroken windows and the crime scene for a crime that had yet to be committed, which had a better version of that photograph, Alan, with a credit to the Connecticut State Police, Alan.
Yeah, someone said to me that we blurred it so it didn't show the detail. I mean, Christ, if they knew how much we're after more clear photographs, what point would we have to blur it?
Within 38 minutes, Alan. It already had 178 comments, and now they've gone so far as to remove it from the cache. Yep. So you can't even retrieve it using the Wayback Machine, Alan. That's their desperation. The government has gone hysterical over this. They're panic-stricken that the truth should got out. And I can't thank you enough, my friend, for being such a magnificent contributor to exposing the truth about Sandy Hook. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, thanking my very special guest this evening, Alan William Powell, for being here, and all of you for watching.